Copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
My name is David Brown. I'm very pleased to be here. The theme which I'd like to develop is evangelism through the normal life of the church. I'm a great believer in the church. I've been working for 12 years with students, and it's a mission field, and it's a fantastic opportunity to reach out to students. But even during that time, although originally the National Council of the GBU didn't want me to, I insisted that I remain pastor of a local church during that time, because I wanted to keep my feet on the ground. And I think there's something remarkable about having a group of people who are of all ages, all sorts of backgrounds, living together in unity within a church. It's since I like football, I'd make the comparison between leading a student movement, which is a bit like being the national trainer. You only see your players from time to time. Whereas if you're the coach of a local team, you see them for the match every Sunday morning, comparing the service to a match. So I think there's something really, really basic about being the church. And so that's why the theme is evangelism through the normal life of the church. But as an introduction, I'd like to give you some results of a survey that was carried out in France a few months ago, from July to September 2013. The logo there is the logo of the National Council of Evangelicals in France, to which somewhere between 70 and 80% of all our evangelical churches belong, plus a high proportion of the parachurch movements and so on. So the GBU is also part of this. And my role within the what's called the CNEF is that I chair the Evangelism Commission. This is why I'm probably in the Evangelism Network. And this Evangelism Commission, the CNEF is fairly recent. It was formed 4 years ago, and our Evangelism Commission has only existed for 2 years. So the first thing we wanted to do was to look at the situation and to see where are we today with evangelism. And our first project was to do a survey among all the pastors belonging to the CNEF. Now, we had over 340 answers, which is pretty high to do this kind of survey. When I say 288 complete responses, that was complete responses. The partial responses meant that people ticked the boxes where they could answer yes or no or put things in order, but didn't add any other comments. So we didn't have any qualitative answers, just quantitative answers. We analyzed by church affiliation, the age of the pastor, the length of time in ministry, the size of the church, and the location of the church, whether it was rural, a smaller town, a city, or Paris. What we discovered, to our surprise, was the results were pretty homogeneous, the same, whatever analysis you did. There are just a few points where a rural area would not be the same as a big city, for example. And there are a few small differences among age groups. For example, older people did not like direct contact in the streets, but younger people did, for example. But overall, although they were anonymous answers, I couldn't tell the difference, even though I knew the church affiliation, whether it was someone from a Pentecostal church or a Baptist church or a Brethren Assembly. I was very surprised by that. It was almost impossible to see, and the results were very similar. So we had a lot of results. I can't give you all the results, but I wanted to focus on one set of answers, which was, what is the best form of evangelism today? the question, what is the best form of evangelism today? Choosing what is the best form. This says, encourage Christians to build relationships with non-Christians. That came out as the absolute top. 87.6% of the pastors put that as the, if you like, overall, putting somewhat agree and strongly agree together, which is often done in this kind of survey, as being the way of evangelism today. It's also very interesting to see the others. Not that I'll spend so much time on the others, but it is interesting to see that the second highest thing that came out in the analysis was to identify those who have the gift of evangelist. And okay, the question was a bit, all the questions were a bit richer than that. They were identify those who have the gift of evangelist and give them the freedom to exercise this gift in your church and so on. But okay, you understand the basic thing. 74% said that. Almost the same figure said, evangelism includes practical action, working with people who have addictions or dealing with loneliness or questions of family and so on. Being also involved in very practical matters on the ground. The fourth was you organize meetings with non-Christians specifically in mind. There's a little contradiction we'll see about this afterwards, which is, if you come back for a moment, between 2, 3 and 4, 74, 73.6, 73.4, is almost the same, I would say, for meetings with non-Christians specifically in mind. 72.6 thought that the best form of evangelism is church planting. We have a question around that, which is not my theme for this morning, but that we also have to think in terms of giving a new dynamic to churches which have been planted for some while and maybe have lost their zeal or their growth. Interchurch events were quite high, but interestingly enough, that was one of the points where there was a difference according to location. In towns and cities, that was put very highly. In rural areas in Paris, it didn't come out very high for different reasons. Direct street contact 63. This is the one that surprised us, though there are two points I wanted to come out, bring out from this. Inviting Christians to ordinary church activities, only 55% said yes, and that's my theme. Of course, when you have a survey, you then interpret. Do you say, this isn't a good method? Or do you say, people haven't understood that it's a good method? So obviously we're in a kind of subjectivity, and one of our aims with our Evangelism Commission is to organize some more surveys among church members, among young people, and among non-Christians to see how they respond to the same questions. On the other hand, we found it was very low to opt for a nationwide evangelism event to try to have some kind of nationwide impact. I think not many, well, only 39% said that. I'll come backwards for a moment because I said there are two things that surprised us. The first was, if you look actually for the figures of this, it came out by far the highest, but there's a much bigger discrepancy between somewhat agree and strongly agree than for all the other points. So most of them, it's sort of half and half, 31, 42, 37, 36. But that one, somewhat agree, was 73.9, and only 13.7 strongly agree. So again, we had to interpret, and our commission decided that our theory, which we need to test on that, is that in today's world, this seems to be the best way of doing things, but pastors are not convinced it's happening, or that church members know how to form relationships with non-Christians. And so we thought that is, we need to test this theory, but there are some reasons which make us think that. Mainly, this is now evangelism training. What training do you want? What is the top one at 75.3%? How to build a relationship with a non-Christian? So that's why we interpreted the small number of strongly agree as compared to somewhat agree, on the grounds that this is the best way, but will it happen? How can it happen? Because when we see this is by far the top thing that is requested for training, just how to build relationships. We're also surprised that the second one was to pray, how to pray, the role of prayer. And that we weren't expecting, that it would be so high in the list of, when we say, what evangelism training do you want? How to pray. To be honest, I wasn't expecting that to be so high in the list of requests. Two other things that you, well, then this one is individual witnessing, how to be an individual witness, so we're very close to this. This one is also a little surprising at 61%, understanding the gospel. Do the Christians really understand what the gospel is and therefore want to evangelize? And this one here at 59% is how to reconfigure the church to be a place which welcomes non-unbelievers, to be accessible to unbelievers and so on, which is again going back to the inviting Christians to ordinary church activities. A lower number thought that this was important than the number of people asking for training on it, which has also made us think that maybe that the one reason it's low is that people didn't know how to do it. The other thing that surprised us was that a relatively low number asked for training in apologetics, understanding competitive world visions, whether it's religion or philosophy and so on. Weren't quite sure what to make of the fact that it was not requested, because usually when people talk in terms of evangelism in France, you immediately start thinking, you've got to understand what Muslims think and what philosophers think and so on. But we concluded that this was important. It was still 35%, but maybe, as in the first instance, not the real motivation. This is a tool that came afterwards to improve your relationship with people, but not the fundamental things. But this was just a lead-in to say, evangelism through the normal life of the church, that it's quite high, that people are saying, we need to learn how to reconfigure the church and be a welcoming church. And even higher, that each person, as the church which is dispersed in the world all through the week, in the places of work and friends and family, should be witnesses to the gospel. So that is a kind of introduction to say why I think that evangelism through the normal life of the church is fundamental. Three points about evangelism today. Still in the idea of the normal life of the church, evangelism is a process. In one sense, it always has been. Children went to Sunday school, they went to the youth group, they understood the gospel and so on. But if there are fewer people who are being reached out to as children, partly because of laws on relationships between children and adults and so on, it's at least in some countries that's quite tough. The idea that we are on a journey, we're on a pilgrimage, does touch people's hearts. Where are we going? And I'm on a journey somewhere. That kind of vocabulary people understand. I also, a few years ago now, read a a PhD thesis by a Baptist pastor in France who came out with the astounding figure that he thought on average that someone had to hear the gospel 5.9 times before they become a Christian. Now, if you think it's 5.8, I'm not going to discuss with you, but whether you agree with the figure or not, I think it's true that people are so far from the gospel that they have to hear it several times. So although it's good that you might just talk to someone on a train or something, if it's in the context of a relationship, then people are more likely to hear the gospel several times, because you have the opportunity to come back at different occasions to talk about the gospel. In other words, this process is very important. There is so much ignorance of people. I remember talking to a student from a leading engineering school in Paris who affirmed to me that he had never heard that Christians thought that Jesus has risen from the dead. Is a guy of about 20 in a leading engineering school. Wow, this ignorance is there. So if it, just the one shot thing doesn't work. In God's grace, it might with a few people, but as I sometimes said with students, the first time you ask a girl out, all you want is that she'll agree to come out with you a second time. You're not going to go any more than that the first time. You don't usually ask someone to marry you the first time you go out. And so, in a sense, we're building a relationship, and this relationship can happen within just the normal life of the Christian, and the Christian will then be the link with the church. Just a few statistics for that, I haven't got them on the PowerPoint, that on a survey, another survey that was done, this was done about 15 years ago, but I think it's probably still very relevant. The question was asked to, within the denomination I work with, France Mission, what was the main thing that brought you to Christ? And there was a kind of there were two figures, because the way the survey was set up meant that you could answer two things. Between 3 and 6% said the Sunday school. Between 3 and 6% the pastor. Between 60 and 80%, someone I knew, a friend, family, work colleague. So we might be spending a lot of time and energy doing all sorts of events and everything, but 60 to 80%, just people meeting people. On the other hand, the third aspect of evangelism today, which is why I come back to my theme of the life of the church, is that we should also be aiming for visibility in the public arena. So if a local church exists, we should be doing the best we can, and in France with what we call laïcité, which is a sort of a philosophical and political definition of secularism as a choice rather than as a sociological observation. We still manage to have, as a church, a certain amount of contact with the local authorities. When I lived in the suburbs of Paris, I was invited with the priest, the rabbi and the imam to make a speech every year at the war memorial in the town on the 8th of May. And this is a fantastic opportunity just to explain a bit who we are. Another very down-to-earth thing is that I've always insisted that where my church is, there should be a link from the municipal website to the website of my church. We are a public institution. So there's no reason why we shouldn't be mentioned on the municipal website. So we have a public visibility as much as we can. There, according to the town or city you're in, it's more or less difficult, but I think it's important to aim for that. Okay, that is the basic premises of what I think we should be trying to do as a church. Three implications of this. You see, the first one, I'm not going to spend a lot of time looking at the details of it, because that's up to you to look at. But it's my definition of what a church is. This definition I've suggested in all sorts of meetings, when I teach in Bible schools and so on, and no one has yet added anything to it, so I think it must be about right. I'll just read it quickly. A local church is a group of Christians who meet together to devote themselves to the apostles' teaching, fellowship, the breaking of bread and prayer, that's Acts 2:42, who welcome all those who believe in Jesus, Romans 15:7 that says, welcome all those who Christ has welcomed, who meet together physically, who have recognized leadership. Of course, you could say a lot about what kind of leadership and what they do, but this is just the main lines. Where each person can use their spiritual gifts, where baptisms take place and the Lord's Supper is observed, where love is a distinctive sign, John 13:35, who are involved in society and proclaim salvation. And I put those together because 1 Timothy 2 starts with praying for the authorities and moves on to the gospel. It's a very interesting way in which Paul starts with one subject and leads on to the fact there's only one mediator between God and man. So, for me, what you've got there on that page is the minimum criteria for a local church. When you got that, you've got a local church. Adapted, maybe it'll look different in Paris than it would in Sofia or Madrid. It might look even more different between Paris and a rural area. It might look even more different between Paris and a church among the pygmies in the forest. It might look very different between what I am doing in my church in Paris today and what Calvin was doing in Geneva at the time of the Reformation. But I think these are the essential points you would find in each church. When you say that, there is an implication that if this is the minimum, if you're doing that, then the way you do it allows you enormous flexibility. Much more than most people think that we have. All the rest is flexible and optional. Just to give a strange example, the mission and denomination I work with once had an article about a church who started saying that we started a new a second weekly worship service on a Saturday evening instead of a Sunday. No other subject brought so many letters to the editor saying, oh, you shouldn't be doing this on a Saturday. The Lord's Day is a Sunday. This is when you should be doing it. Where do you find this? In the scriptures. But it's amazing how much people were attached to something which was not on this list of minimum requirements. I sometimes quote an example of that. It's a church I heard about in London that decided their best time that they should organize their outreach Bible studies was on a Sunday evening at 12 o'clock in the evening, at midnight. If I tell you that it was a Chinese church reaching out to people working in Chinese restaurants, then you understand why. Most churches wouldn't do it at midnight on a Sunday. But in their case, it made perfect sense. So we have to think as well, how do we adapt to the society we're in? In my particular case, in Paris, we now have a second service on a Sunday evening at 7:30, followed by pizzas. Because a lot of young people in Paris don't know that Sunday morning exists. Go to bed late on Sunday morning, or they go away for the weekend out of the city and come back at the end of the afternoon on Sunday, and they can come. Or we have older people who come. We're very happy to have a more meditative Sunday evening service without all the children running around and shouting and so on. So there are various reasons for it. So it's not just young people, it's a range of people. So in other words, as I put on the paper you have, in that sense, soteriology trumps ecclesiology. I mean by that communicating the gospel, the salvation, is more important than reflection on ecclesiology, although the two obviously go together and should really be completely together. But I'm talking of ecclesiology in the sort of the secondary debates around ecclesiology rather than ecclesiology as such. Okay, so that was the first point, the implications of evangelism being part of the normal life of the church is that we have to learn flexibility for that, so that someone coming to the church, and I think this happens more and more, strangely enough, in today's world, someone may turn up or be invited to the church. They need to feel welcomed. They need to feel that they have their place. They need to feel that they have time and space to go on their journey without being jumped on straight away, to give them the chance to discover what Christianity is about. And just to see what are we doing. If someone needs prayer, we stop and pray. In our church, we have a fellowship meal two or three times a month after the morning service, and most people stay. So we have a time of fellowship and sharing on things. Okay, sometimes around the meal, you might start with the result of the match last night, and then, but sooner or later you move on to other topics, and you never know what you're going to talk about, but it's interesting. People feel that we're being ourselves, and that's very important. The second point is that we need to learn, the way I put it was, to live seamlessly. Do you know what a seam is? The seam is on a piece of clothing, where two bits are put together. But we want our life to be one, if you like. And I think evangelism doesn't work if you consider it to be, we've got our normal Christian life, and we just add on a little bit, which is evangelism. It doesn't work. So I developed a whole lot of teaching in our church using the word today. I'm not necessarily going to read those verses. You can look them up. Hopefully, it says today in your translation as well. There's one little mistake on the paper. It's not 1 Peter 3:18, but 3:15. Don't know how the mistake happened. And so, I was saying and teaching in the church that we need to worship God today, where we are. Even standing on the platform of the metro, or at your job, or at home and everything else. Try to be developing an attitude of continual worship. The same for trusting God today. In everything we do, we have to learn to trust God. Little things, big things, but we're trusting God all day, whether we're at work or at home or ever. Wherever. Fighting the good fight, obeying God today, as Hebrews 3 says about the seduction, the temptation of sin, to be fighting today. It's every day. And I think the one of the big problems that we have sometimes in our church life is that we come into the church into a kind of bubble. And in this bubble, we sing certain songs and we feel good. And then we sort of come out of the bubble, and so we don't quite know how to live outside the bubble. So even in the suburban train, we we put on an ear, our earphones, and still listen to the same songs that we've sung on the Sunday morning to sort of try to maintain this feeling. Whereas if during the service as such, I don't even like the word service really, but and I don't know what to call it, the gathering, we are talking about our lives wherever we are, how we can worship God and obey God and trust God in everything we're doing, then we're not in this bubble. I think it's very important to do that. So that, for example, going in the other direction, I, from time to time, although I like consecutive preaching, I try to illustrate it in what's going on. I preached recently a whole message on Noah because of the film that you may have seen, if you've seen it. One or two bits aren't very scriptural. but it's important to see it. And I said to the church, you must go and see it, because people at work are going to talk about it. And if you haven't seen it, how can you say, you know, what the Bible is teaching and correct and say, yeah, but that was good. One thing was good in it, you know, God really does judge sin, for example. That's good. That's true. So, having been through those three things, worshipping God, trusting God today, fighting a good fight, the fourth one is to do good to the person that God brings into my life today. And that's the adventure. You know, you don't know who you're going to meet and how and who might ask you a question. And so it wasn't just evangelize, but do good to the person. And part of that is to preach the gospel. I made little cards with all that for the Christians to put in their Bibles or their pockets or something to remember. This is what we need to do today. So we're living seamlessly. So if we are worshipping God during the coffee break at work or fighting some kind of temptation, and someone then talks about something, well, the Lord is there. It's part of your life. You're living seamlessly. And I think this is very important. So within the church, we can encourage each other to do that. I mentioned Hebrews 3. I haven't looked at those verses, but you can find them, which talks about encouraging one another. So the whole point is, when we're around the meal table after the service, someone might say, well, yeah, I had a problem at work because someone said this, and what should I have said, and so on. So we talk about it. It's important. Living life seamlessly. And so the third aspect of that, as far as church is concerned, living as a community, is to do this in tune with your particular culture. When we do a course which I've made in France called Bridges Passerelles, we do it in our church. It's a bit like Alpha, but it's shorter and it's a bit different. We start with an apéritif, because that's what you have in France. What do you do in the evening? You start the evening with an apéritif. So that's part of being cultural. But it goes much deeper than that. It's the question, how can we be like others but Christian? That's we contextualization is very complicated, and we'll probably talk about that, because it's the issue that we're facing. On the one hand, we want to be as like others as possible, but in some places we're going to fight part of the culture. But my opinion is that if you're not contextualized, then there's no way you can fight that part of the culture, because people think you're outside it, criticizing this culture. You have to be within it to be able to criticize. So we have a whole lot of issues around that. I haven't got very much time to go into it, but these are the questions that we need to ask. Is since evangelism is part of the normal life of the church, how do we help each Christian to live his new identity in Christ? What does it mean? the way I sometimes put it is, what does it mean to say that Jesus is the only Saviour and the only Lord? Let's talk about it. What does this mean when you download certain things without paying? What does it mean if you use your office photocopier for photocopying things? What does it mean if you don't pay when you go onto the metro, you jump over the barrier? A lot of people do in Paris. I use that for evangelism, because when someone does it in front of me, I say, ah, God saw you. I had some very interesting discussions with people. I choose the person, certain people. I wouldn't say it to. How do we encourage diversity within the local fellowship? That's very important, to accept that people are very different to each other, very different. And we want to have this diversity, because each one has got their range of friends. We want them to feel that they are accepted within the local fellowship. Genuine and meaningful conversations in our church life, within our French context. That means, and it's the third time I've said it, that means sitting down to have a meal, very often, or for a drink. That is when you talk. To have meals here which just last a few minutes, it's impossible. When we have our student camps, for example, and I've been speakers at various countries of the world at IFES camps, our camps, the midday meal lasts for about 2 hours at a student camp. Just, as soon as you put your feet under the table, you say, you start talking. That's where people talk in France. You talk because you're eating. You eat to talk. That is the way it works. But each person has to find how it works in their culture. Maybe in the UK it means going to the pub or something. I don't know. I don't live in the UK. But we have to think how it works. We want to welcome unbelievers, point D, and let them, the expression I like, walk in our landscape. They see how we're living. There was a, when the CNEF that I mentioned earlier was founded, had its first major meeting, there were reports in the newspapers and in Le Monde, which is the best French newspaper, there was an article in which they used the sentence, they even pray about someone who is taking an exam. This was a surprise to the journalists. Why do you pray about someone taking an exam? But this is what we do. We pray about things. We try to forgive each other. We try to understand each other. We try to support each other. And people are going to walk in this landscape. We want to help Christians interact with people regarding their culture and current issues. Okay, that's an interesting, an enormous thing. Building relationships with unbelievers, but recognizing the risks involved. I put John 17, 15 to 18, because it says, as we were sent into the world, as Christ was sent into the world, he sends us. But it also says, sanctify them by your truth. Your word is the truth. So we do also need to protect people as they build relationships with unbelievers. Connecting with local authorities and local religious and secular leaders. I mentioned that. I'm just doing a sort of brief run through of issues. How to maintain our freedom of speech in the public arena. That's very important for us. Within France, we are trying to develop the idea that talking to God is a religious activity. So we don't necessarily want to do that in the public arena. But talking about God is a question of freedom of speech. And that's why we should always have the right to talk about God, because talking about God is not a religious activity. Mm-hmm. Talking to God is, not talking about God. And a lot of people in France don't make that difference, so we're working on that. And again, how to decide what are the best times to meet as a church and the best ways. I don't know if you've got it in your Bible. Unfortunately, my suggested reading is in French, because I don't know, I didn't know what exists in other languages. I went to the book room yesterday, and amazing number of books. Some of the books mentioned I've got with me, one or two copies, so if anyone's interested, if they read French, I can let you have them. Okay. Over to you. How do you react to that? I think what I'd like to do first is to ask you in little groups of two and three, just to share for 5 minutes with the people around you, what are the points that I mentioned that seem the most relevant to you in your situation today, okay? So 5 minutes in groups of two or three to share on that. Okay, I'd be very interested to hear what kind of things you were talking about. I think there are probably two aspects to that. The first thing, which is a bit negative, it might say that some churches organize so many events that you don't have time to meet non-Christians. That's one thing. The other thing is, within our context in France, how do you bring up the subject without immediately saying, we haven't got the right to talk about that. That's part of laïcité. It's for some people in some circumstances, it's like a big sort of weight on you, that the idea that we haven't got the right to talk about God, which is why I said we're trying to get over the answer. This is freedom of speech. It's not anything else. So I think there are probably two aspects to it: to encourage people to be human, but also to know what kind of ways in which we can do it in a way that won't shut the door straight away to people. But people say, you know, be careful in meals not to bring up sort of religion and politics, because it really sort of divides people. And how do you do it in a way that people want to go on listening? I sometimes quote Colossians 4, where it talks about your answers should be, what's that in English? Full of grace. And salt. Season with salt. Okay, season with salt. Maybe it's my interpretation of seasoned with salt, I don't know. But I say to people, okay, ask a group, hands up, who can eat one Pringle? You know what Pringles are? Crisps. Okay, who can eat just one and say, that's okay. As soon as you've eaten one, you want to take another one. And it's the sort of the salt in it and everything that does that. So I say to people, That is the kind of training that if someone, for example, says in a meal something about, I didn't know you were a Christian, and then you sort of go into a speech for a quarter of an hour that goes all the way from Genesis to Revelation through Augustine and Calvin and goodness, what else. The guy will say, that's the last time I ask him a question. But if you answer just the question asked, or just one little bit, and let the other person then react, then that works better. Now, I don't know if it's the same in every country, but in conversation in France, in general, it's a very two-way thing all the time. To interrupt someone is not necessarily bad. To interrupt someone shows that you're interested in what he's saying. But in some cultures, like in America, it's, you know, each person says their speech and stops, and the other person, you know, it doesn't work like that. You have to be careful not to interrupt people too much. I'm not saying that, but conversation is sort of like ongoing dialogue all the time, and so, you know, you have to learn to, that's what I meant, to learn how to do it in a as Christians. And
some cultures, both people are speaking at the same time.
Yeah. When is an election evening in England, in France, is very interesting, because you have about sort of 10 politicians around a table, and all 10 are talking at once, and you can't hear a word of what's going on. But that's the way it is. Yeah. But you do pick up some things of what the other person is saying. Yeah. It's not very parliamentarian. I'm beginning within our Evangelism Commission to make a list of resources that could be useful for that. It's also possibly true that pastors, more than most people in the church, don't have a range of non-Christians that they know, because they don't meet them all the time at work and everything. You know, I generally meet other pastors and so on. So it's difficult to talk from your personal experience of work, and as you go back to in the past before I was a pastor and so on. So it's possibly why we need to think it out with people who are actually on the ground as well, how you do this. In one of the books I wrote, I said that the biggest obstacle to evangelism is when you think it's an event. Because then you're thinking in terms of meetings, you're thinking in terms of outreach afternoons or something like that. And I think people are willing enough to go down this path. But one of the obstacles, and I'm walking on eggs, can you say that in English?
Eggshells.
Eggshells, okay, well, you have to be very careful anyway. What I'm saying is that often the parachurch evangelistic associations are more into organizing events and so on. So when you ask them to come in to do training, they're not going to just talk about that. So of the three remits we have within the Evangelism Commission of the CNEF, the third of the three is to help coach parachurch movements to understand what churches and Christians really need. It's a big problem. And I think that's one of the problems we have, that as soon as you think evangelism, you tend to think not of what you're doing in your local church, but of, I won't name names, but the movements who are known as being more aggressively evangelistic.
How do you factor in the fact that the gospel is a revelation, conversion is an event, it's crossing from death to life, it's becoming a new creation, that sometimes if we just focus on process, the medium can become the message. It can become possible to communicate that actually becoming a Christian is a process. Well, we don't communicate that, do we?
My answer to that would be, when we're doing the teaching in the church, if you're preaching on a Sunday morning, then obviously this sort of that idea is going to come out according to different texts you're dealing with. I'm not saying, because it's a process, that you communicate that it's a process. You communicate it's event, but you live it in reality with people. Well, as Christians, you're accompanying to them. Because the verse I often think of in 1 Peter is waiting for the day when God will visit them. That's the French translation, the day when God will intervene in their lives. So some people have said that evangelism today is very similar to evangelism of children in a family. That the children grow up, they learn all sorts of things, they see what their parents are doing, but they still have to make their own choice. And in today's world, where the visual is important, where people are so ignorant, you have to give them the time to understand what we're talking about, because it's so different. But I agree with you 100%. At a certain time, the choice has to be made. And in that sense, the fact that we do have baptism, church membership, and so on, is also a way of communicating that every baptism you're saying there's a decision to be made.
I think that could be a very interesting angle on this.
I think it's a very important point. But as people have said, where is the Areopagus? Okay, where is it today? And in today's society, we don't have a lot of places. I don't know. If I went to the Jewish synagogue and started saying, I don't agree with you. I don't know. I'd like to know where it is today. And that is a very important question, where we can meet and talk with people today. On the other hand, I think, and I'm more and more convinced of that the... when we meet together as a church, we sort of tend to say, we're going to now meet for a Bible study, or now we're going to meet for a worship service or something. But I prefer to talk in terms of we're gathering together, we don't know quite what's going to happen. My church Bible study, the first half hour we drink herbal tea and just talk about whatever we want to talk to, whilst people just sort of turn it bit by bit. And then, you know, and then sometimes we pray before, sometimes we pray afterwards. And I think this sort of freedom that you're just seeing what's happening. So in that sense, according to the people present, you'll have a different approach, whether they're more non-Christians or not or something. But to know where we can debate with people is a, in today's society, is a big question. Okay, time is up.